It's time for the Warrior Way podcast, brought to you by Winona State Athletics and Layton Media, hosted by Liam Stats.
Welcome to another episode of the Warrior Way, here produced by The Fan Winona, no longer the Winona Sports Network. That's a recent change with our first guest on, kind of with the new station and all that stuff, head coach Seth Wing for the Winona State baseball team. Thanks for coming on today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to get the season rolling and certainly excited for the spring weather, no doubt about it.
Yeah, it was 60 the other day and I wore shorts, so I'm ready.
Yeah, all good, all good.
Well, you guys kick off the season soon, this Friday to be exact. You go down to Missouri, you face William Jewell College. What are the struggles of being like a northern team, obviously, and the season has to start in February, and then you guys are traveling pretty much through like the first half of the season?
Yeah, just the feel of the game. You know, defensively, it really is a struggle for us early on. You're going against teams that have been outside scrimmaging, and they played this last weekend, so they have three games under their belt. So we're just, you know, we're coming out of the gym, and even we are able to get on the football field at Winona State, so that does help just from, you know, our ground balls and fly balls and base runners, but you just don't have the live off the bat trying to get a base runner out. And I think that's our biggest issue, the detriment. We can kind of recreate everything else, like live at bats in our cages and those sorts of things. It just is the feel of the game, controlling the running game, the speed of the game, and just it takes a few to get used to that. And after we get through 5, 6, 7, 8 games, it really, we get into the flow of things pretty well. But certainly a challenge early on, and not having a bubble or any sort of covered turf where we can hit live with a live defense is definitely a detriment to us.
Yeah, no, it's interesting to see teams kind of how they approach that, right? You know, a lot of them, they do play kind of, you know, the Mankato Dome or over in Rochester, right? So having that chance does help sometimes, but there's really nothing like being outside, you know, on an actual grass field or anything like that. I've found, at least, you know, when I've traveled with teams and all that stuff, they always seem to prefer, you know, being outside rather than inside for the domes and all that stuff.
Yeah, no doubt. And yeah, I talk to the guys all the time, control what you can control, and we can't control it. So we just do our best to replicate it, prepare hard and roll with the punches, and it'll be fine. We'll get it worked out right away. It won't take long. And I expect our guys to really respond well and play well on Friday.
To adjust, yeah. Shifting gears here a little bit, and this is something I've found myself asking a lot, but, you know, with multiple different sports that walk through the door, it's always, the answer's always kind of different, right? It's with the input of NIL and the transfer portal now affecting all three divisions of collegiate athletics, how have you seen it affect Division II college baseball?
Yeah, I don't think it's been had any much of effect at all at our level, which is nice. It feels pure. Players are coming to Winona State, they're coming to Concordia St. Paul, and they're going to schools in our league for the right reason, because it's a really good fit for them academically and baseball wise. And we're not in that yet. Will that happen? Potentially, but none of us really are fully funded with operations and scholarship budgets even are yet. And so for us to add NIL to it, it just seems like a far stretch. And quite frankly, it's kind of nice from my perspective.
Yeah. So, have you seen that kind of at Division III too? And Division I obviously is nature of the beast, right? You know, that's just Division I athletics. But so Division I or Division II, Division III, it's kind of just remaining the same game it's always been.
It feels pure, feels real. I'm not running into recruiting or anything like that. So it certainly is, it is nice. It just feels like it's the same as it's always been from a recruiting standpoint.
It does seem you're the first coach that I've had, or even athlete, you know, especially if, with the rise of it over the last couple of years, that have said that, you know, that they haven't noticed really that much effect on it. That's very interesting.
Yeah, the only effect I would say would be the transfer portal. You know, a player does well in our league, they get in the portal, then they get the opportunity at Division One. So there is an impact, but just as the initial high school recruiting, it really hasn't been an issue at all.
Wow. Yeah. And you know, with you being kind of in the Midwest, you know, I think I think people think of baseball, and especially collegiate baseball, as being more Southern, and that you could look at that. I mean, the SEC wins a national championship, right. It seems like every two or so years, right? At least one of those teams. With you being in the more Northern states, obviously up here in Minnesota, you know, the Midwest, how does recruiting change for you? Do you just stick within your region, or do you take the chance on anybody that you can find?
Yeah, it's certainly very regional based. There's certainly some kids out there that are willing to relocate, but at the end of the day, you could get the best players out of the Twin Cities or Milwaukee or any of the big population areas, and those guys all want to go to play in warm weather. I mean, no one wants to play in 30-degree weather, and so that's something that we're always going to be up against from that standpoint. And but that's why we pretty much are going to stay in region. I was at a head coach at a private D3 school down in Iowa for 12 years, and you know, we were able to attract some Arizona, California, Colorado, Florida kids, but it was academic based, and these kids were looking for an opportunity and might not be in the best players from their region, but certainly we were able to get them to relocate to the Midwest.
Speaking of that D3 college, that's Cornell, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, out of Mount Vernon. You were also the athletic director,
yeah.
Which first time in my life, and like you see it in high school a lot,
yeah.
Right? You know, but
yeah.
First time in my life for any college that you were the baseball coach and the athletic director. So how did you navigate that?
Man, I tell you, it was something special. It was 2 years. It was during COVID. We were in the middle of a huge renovation project of our athletic facility. It was a struggle. It was something that I will always take from the experience and being very special, and certainly has given me great perspective when I speak with the administration at Winona State, because I know what they're dealing with daily, and or at least a glimpse of it, I should say.
Yeah.
I don't think going through it, it certainly taught me a lot, but also it taught me, you know, that I really belong working with the athletes day in and day out as a coach and a mentor. And you don't necessarily get to do that as an administrator as much as that you'd like. You know, maybe 10 years from now, who knows? But I certainly, I'm not interested ever doing that again for the time being. So
and we did have Jen Flowers on one of these. Yeah, she said, you know, it's two sides of the game, right?
Yeah.
And it's either you like being in the administrative side or you like being on the coaching, you know, playing side, and there is no in between, right? So,
you know, I took the opportunity. I felt like I couldn't pass it up there at Cornell. They asked me. I didn't even apply for it. It was something that our athletic director retired, and the president called me on a random Sunday, and I'm like, what is he calling me for? And he just said, we want to hire within. We don't even want to open this thing up, and we think you're the right person. And you know, it's a cost saving measure for schools that struggle a little bit financially,
yeah.
or quite frankly, anybody that wants to do that. You throw a carrot out there of a nice little pay raise, and then you get two jobs taken care of with one person. And certainly it helped them out in the long run. And quite frankly, it helped me out because it gave me experience that I can't ever, ever replace. So
yeah.
Win-win, I think, for everybody, no doubt about it.
So were there ever times where you had to pick one over the other, though?
You know, I was coming in hot for practice almost every single day. I never did have to miss a game or practice. I just felt very unprepared for the games and practices. So that was the hard part, juggling. There's no doubt. And it was just a unique time with COVID and all the testing and all the protocols the NCAA and our conference was putting on just for us to play the game. And so there were so many meetings when it came to that within the school, within the conference office, and also doing a facility project on top of that. I just felt like I was in meetings on the hour, every hour from, you know, 8 a.m. until 3, and then literally sprinting out to practice with zero preparation. So
man,
that certainly was something interesting.
Yeah. And probably, like you said, probably had something to do again.
Yeah. There's no way.
Well, was Cornell College the first non-Winona State coaching gig that you had?
Yeah, at the college level. Yeah, it was really unique. I was a player here. I was on the roster from 1999 to 2002. And then it was during the transition of Coach Grob, who was a great legend here and just an amazing coach, and built this program to what it is in the history of it. It was amazing. And then Coach Polk took over during, it would have been my third or fourth year in school. So anyway, Coach Polk saw that I had a passion for coaching, and I was actually coaching. I was working a camp here at Winona State as a player, and I had a high school parent come up to me and said, "Hey, I love how you're working with the kids. Would you be interested in applying? We have an opening at our high school." And so it was at Blair Taylor High School over in Wisconsin.
Oh,
Blair,
really?
Wisconsin, yeah. So they played summer ball in the Dairyland League back then, and so they asked. So I'm like, you know what? Let's do it. So I applied. I ended up getting the job, and I was a head coach there for 2 years at Blair Taylor High School in the summertime. We started May 15th, and then went through.
Is that like
July.
Legion baseball?
It was actually the high school sanction. Really? Back then. They had it was 2001 and two or two and three. I can't quite remember, but
wow.
Anyway, they had summer high school baseball, summer high school state tournament, everything in that league. So
wow,
very interesting.
Yeah, that's. I mean, it's something I don't think is replicated now. I mean, you know, there's Legion baseball, right? Which I think is the closest that you get to that. But wow, having it be like sanctioned by like your state body, wow, that's crazy.
Right. And I grew up in Iowa, and they still have summer high school baseball in Iowa.
Really?
They play 40 games high school, the state tournaments in late July, and they'll start playing. And I think it allows kind of the rural schools to be able to have. Athletes run track and play soccer and then roll right into the baseball, softball summer seasons.
Yeah, gives them a chance to play baseball in warm weather.
No doubt.
Yeah, I remember in high school, it was always like, all right, we're gone. You know, it's like you start and it doesn't matter what the field conditions are. We're playing games, right? Yep. And then it's over. It's over before the end of the school season's over. And I'm just sitting there going like, I don't even know what just happened.
Yeah, exactly.
I just got blitzed, right?
There's no doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Well, that's very interesting. And so then you were at, you know, Blair Taylor, and then did Cornell approach you, or did you?
Yeah, Kyle Polk, who was the head coach at Winona State at the time, kind of saw my passion for coaching, and I really wasn't going to contribute much on the field my senior year. And so at Winona State, so he asked me, he's like, "Hey, would you be willing to coach our JV team?" And so I was like, "You know what? What the heck? Let's get this thing going."
Yeah.
So I started as basically a student coach in 2003 as a JV coach here, back when we had a JV team and schedule. And then Kyle asked me to be the grad assistant. So I was the grad assistant. So the JV coach 2003 as a student assistant, then as a grad assistant in 4 and 5. And then I Larry Holstead, the athletic director at the time, just was able to create a full-time position with the admissions office and coaching and a assistant football, assistant baseball and admissions counselor. So again, in the cost-saving world and the budgets, basically I was full-time admissions counselor from July 1st until December 31st. And then I was full-time baseball coach at Winona State from January 1st until June 30th. But while also managing baseball in the fall, I was helping. But also on the road for admissions. And then a football coach went in and did the admissions job, and then he was full time in the football world in the fall.
Well, there you go.
It was a win-win for everybody. Yeah, so I did that from 2005 until 2011.
Age you here, but in 2005, I would have been 2 years old.
Oh, man. Sorry, dude. Yeah, time goes by.
It does. Fast.
But anyway, I was... In 2011, we were just on one of those magical runs. You know, back, we all basically, it started with football having a lot of success in the early 2000s, and then men's basketball going off with their run, and then we were able to recruit and get guys to come to these basketball games, and within 4 years of the basketball winning national championships, we were playing for a national championship in 2011 and lost to West Florida in the championship game. And you know, I remember being down in Cary, North Carolina at the World Series, and we're in between the semifinals and the championship. And, you know, someone approached me, and actually one of my coaches now, he said, you know, I see Cornell's open, and he knew us from, I grew up close there. And I'm like, man, I don't know. Cause they were horrible. They were 3-30. And so anyway, I just applied. I'm like, all right, I'm literally, we had a light practice before the national championship. Anyway, fast forward a couple of days, we're in the airport coming home after the national championship, and Cornell called then. And next thing you know, I was down there on campus interviewing, and then I took a leap of faith and took the job. So crazy.
And you exited that job as the all-time wins leader. So
yes.
I don't know if it was like a bad decision, to be honest.
Yeah,
you know?
It took a lot. I mean, you got to think about this. In 2010, they were 4 and 30. 2011, Cornell was 3-29, and we were in a national championship here at Winona State. So my perspective walking into that job was way different than what they had. Baseball was not important there. And so we just worked and worked and worked, and it became important. And within 4 years, we were playing for a conference championship. In year six, we went to the NCAA tournament. So that's when the president's like, hey, you need to take this AD job. So anyway, sometimes that the success leads to other opportunities. Yeah. There's no doubt about it, which ultimately led me back here. You know, I don't think when I left here in 2011, this was my dream job. This is truly where I didn't even want to leave, but I felt like I had to leave. I knew Coach Polk was going to be here for another 10 plus years. And like, I wanted to go pave my own path. And luckily enough, just through some hard work and being around the right people, and we were able to, and it led me back to Winona State, which got my dream job.
Yeah. And how did you come back? You know, did they reach out to you again, or did you see it open up and you're like, I've got to go for it?
You know, Coach Polk gave me a little inside info. Obviously maintain a great relationship, still talk to him frequently to today. And he had told me he was going to be retiring at the end of the year. He hadn't told anybody besides obviously his coaching staff. And so I got the intel. I wasn't going to apply because I'm like, I'm settling into this AD thing, and that just might be the venture. Obviously, the money was good, much better than what it was coaching, being an athletic director and baseball coach. And so, you know, we had young kids, we were settled, we were in a great community. But then I had people started reaching out. It wasn't anybody within Winona State Athletics. It was alums. It was people from the community, and said, hey, like, are you going to apply for this thing?
Are you going to take it?
And I just felt the gravitational pull to do it. I wasn't gonna. And then I'm like, you know what? Let's do this, you know? And it just, I had to think back of what this program meant, what Winona State meant to me. And it really has been, I'm so glad that I'm here.
That's heavy.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I don't mean to, I think that's the way, like, obviously when people say heavy, they mean sad, but no, that's just like very emotionally,
very cool.
Yeah, very emotionally charged.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of almost fate, you know?
Yeah, there's no doubt. And you think about even with like similar situations with Coach Curtin, although he didn't leave, he stayed, you know, and finally to get to be the head coach of Winona State football after all of these years. I mean, it's this kind of the same deal. It's just, I left for 12 years, you know, and back, but always was thinking about this place. And so I think that's what makes, and why Jen Flowers is here, and why Brian Curtin's here, and then now why I'm here. And it's just exciting. You know, we have all lived this place, and I think that's, these are the right decisions to have these people here, because they bleed purple. They're going to do, they understand what we have to overcome to be successful, and are willing to put the work into it.
I was going to say that exactly.
Yeah.
It's like, it seems like all of these coaches now coming into these head coaching jobs, or these, you know, athletic directing jobs, you know, in the case of Jen Flowers, they all start here and then they all leave. But in the back of their mind, at the back of their heart somewhere, it's always there, you know, it's always whispering to them. It's like, you know, do I actually want to be done with Winona State forever?
Right.
Do I want to have that shot to come back and contribute back to a campus that's given me a lot some way? Right. It's really cool. Again, like you said, you're not the first person to say this, and I don't think that you're going to be the last either. You know, like 10 years from now, certain people are going to say the same thing, right? Where they're going to go, I miss Winona. Mm-hmm. I miss being in this community. I miss being on that campus. It's awesome, quite frankly. You know, it's really cool that so many alumni and previous coaches have said, yeah, if I got a shot to do it again, I'm going to do it again, right?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And I think that's what's great. And, you know, as coaches, we don't always have the opportunity to give back to the school financially, but we can give it with our work and take the programs where we feel that they need to be and should be and all of that. So that's the mission that I have every single day.
It seems like it's going well. You know, you took this job in 2022. So kind of on the tail end of COVID, you know, that messed a lot of stuff up, especially through collegiate athletics. I mean, it destroyed a lot of recruiting and transferring. It kind of canceled a lot of seasons. Mm-hmm. It didn't result in the way that a lot of people wanted things to do, you know, to go. They canceled a lot of postseasons, right? You know, there was no March Madness play that year.
Right? Right.
It threw a wrench into a lot of things. So on that tail end of COVID, how you inherited a program that was, you know, in kind of a weird state. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say, you know, terrible state or anything
right.
like that.
No.
But in a state that nobody had ever seen it in before,
right?
So how did you navigate out of that?
Yeah, it was it's been a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. You know, coming in, I'm like, okay, this is the plan and this is what we're going to do. And it was more of a mindset shift. It was guys that were having to deal with COVID and having to deal with campus restrictions. And quite frankly, like, I felt like guys within the program, they were just happy to be playing versus wanting to win. That's a huge difference.
Yeah.
And so I love those guys. They welcome me with open arms. I feel like a Groundhog's Day 3 years in a row, but now we feel like with the players that I've been recruiting and the vision that I've shared in recruiting, it's their turn now. We really don't have anybody. We graduated a ton of guys this last year that all were recruited by Coach Polk and his staff. And now they're all gone. And now we have this group of guys that have kind of waited to take this program, and they have the vision of they're not happy to play. They're happy to win. And so just a mindset shift, there's no doubt about it. And I think COVID created this, like, oh man, I'm just happy to be out here playing ball.
Yeah.
Instead of being like, we're here to win ball games and we're here to win a conference and get to the postseason and play for something really special. And so, like I tell our guys, I go, you leave Winona State, you leave college with your relationships, the friendships and the memories and your degree. Everything's better when you win. Everything.
Yeah. You might not always remember the wins, but you remember the losses.
100%. There's no doubt about it. So that's the thing. I mean, that's just been a mindset shift, and now it's our time. So I do feel like we are not going to, I mean, you could look at our first 3 years and it's almost the exact same season 3 years in a row, you know, seventh, eighth, ninth in the conference, 22, 28, you know, I think 1 year's 24 and 28, and 1 year was 21 and 28. It's like, good Lord, can we get off the stretch here? But I do think we're going to, I feel like this crew has got the opportunity to take us and get us not only over 500, but actually get up in that 30 plus win
category. Well, that's what I noticed, you know, since you took over. Yeah, yes, they've been under 500, yep, but they have been continuously improving.
Yes.
Right? You know, it hasn't been stagnant. It hasn't been getting worse.
Correct.
But like you said, you're tired of kind of hanging out around that eighth or ninth best in the conference.
Yeah.
You're ready to take that next leap forward. With your recruits under the belt, like you said, you're instilling that they want to win,
yep,
and not just be like, you know, I'm playing baseball in college, never thought I'd get here, but you know, they're like, I'm playing baseball in college and I want to win, right? Like, I want to be that team that takes this program back into its heyday, right?
Yep.
Where we're at the top of the building, we're playing for national championships or conference championships. So it's good to see. You know, I don't think that people, especially in the northern states, you know, they don't think of college baseball that much as a sport that they want to go out and enjoy, right? You know, up here it's a lot of football, it's a lot of basketball, and other towns, especially Minnesota, it's a lot of college hockey. But baseball is still one of those sports that it's a summer sport. It'll be around. It was around before the sun imploded, and it'll be around long after the sun explodes, right? You know, it's one of those sports that'll be around forever.
Yeah.
That it can mean a lot if people like sit back and they pay attention to it.
There's no doubt. And obviously weather plays such a big role in that. Like, no one's coming out to our games when it's 38 and wind blowing sideways 30 miles an hour. It's not happened. But I will say, you know, we're really making some headways in the community. We've been very engulfed in youth programs and providing a lot of camps and clinics. And I've been helping with evaluations of youth organizations, the VFW, working with the Legion team, those sorts of things. And so we're building the relationships with the community. And, you know, when we get some good weather, we have really nice crowds out at Lowry Field. And so that's really fun. If we get a Saturday in April when it's 60 degrees, I mean, the place is packed. If it's not that, there's no one there. And rightfully so. If it wasn't my job, I wouldn't be there either.
Like 89 degrees outside. No, thank you. But you guys have a nice field. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's iconic. You know, I like that it's built on the backside of the football stadium. Do you have a nickname for the right field wall?
We don't. We probably should. But certainly our left-handers love hitting at that yard. There's no doubt about it.
It seems nice. You know, yeah. Like, and I think that's also underappreciated. Yeah. If you have a nice place to play games,
there's no doubt. Yeah. It looks. I will say this: the setting is beautiful. It's unique. It's not a cookie cutter yard like a lot of places that we go to.
Yeah.
You know, the surface itself, it looks good when you're driving by the driving on the road. Yeah. The surface itself is just years of, you know, back in, even when I wasn't going to school here, like football practice, we didn't have field turf at the football field. So the football and soccer were practicing so they'd on the outfield. So they didn't get a chance to ruin their game field. And so all those years of that has created just some tough
playing conditions,
this the surface itself, although you know it is what it is, but that is something that we just got to overcome a little bit. But I tell you what, that our maintenance crew does an awesome job making that thing look really good, and we work hard at it too, our players, and just we want it to look the part, and yeah. It certainly does. And I love the field, and if you ask every coach in the NSIC, you know, one of their favorite places to go play, it's here, just because of the setting and the uniqueness of the field.
Yeah. So bucket list, would it be new playing turf?
Yeah, turf. You know, honestly, I don't. That location is amazing. I know the university has bigger plans for that location of the field. Eventually, we're going to get moved down by softball, I think, and turf. But turf is king, and we've
over dirt.
Yes, 100%. In the spring. Yes, if it was summer,
yeah.
You know, and we've been practicing on the football field, having turf these last week and a half here. It's been just fantastic. You don't get any bad hops. You don't have to worry about it. It could rain, you know, all day, and then you get a 2-hour window. The field's ready to go.
Yeah.
You can plow snow off of it. It's just a big deal. The turf is a big deal.
Now, I remember I worked in the Northwoods League quite a few seasons. I'm assuming you know
the
Northwoods League. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very fun.
Oh, yeah.
But they had a dirt infield, so when it rains...
You're on the tarp
crew. Oh, yeah. All of the interns. I broadcasted, right? So I'm in the press box. Oh, they're pulling turf. You got to sprint down the steps so you're not, you know, before somebody goes, where were you at? And then you got to hear about it for the rest of the day if you weren't there to pull turf.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not, there's no, nothing drags it back. Yep. It's you pull it out and you stake it down. And then when it's dry, quote unquote dry, because it's never actually dry.
Right.
Then it's, all right, everybody, go. And everybody pulls it off and then you roll it back up the normal way. And there's nothing else. It's not mechanized.
Yeah.
There's nothing else. There's nobody riding a 4x4 out there helping you pull it along. It's you and 20 other 18-year-old kids pushing tarp off a field. And I do prefer turf.
Yes.
Except for that one nice summer day when 100%. You're like, I really wish I was on dirt.
No doubt about it. And if we were a summer sport and the college season, I would be all for the dirt. But the spring, it's such a big deal.
And when it sleets.
Yeah, you know, for sure.
Yeah, I do not blame you whatsoever for that. Yeah, no. Baseball is that sport where it's like, you know, I feel like there's a wrestling match constantly with people who are like, I prefer it the old way, right?
Yeah.
You know, where it's people like traditionalists. Mm-hmm. And then there are people who are like, well, I really like the fact that there is now a pitch clock, right?
Right.
They really like that. And, you know, with the automatic ball strike system mm-hmm. coming in. And I like the fact that they are trying to appease both crowds, especially with the EBS system. It's like, no, we're not going to replace an umpire, but we're giving it another chance for, you know, right? So, which I do appreciate, you know, it's like, I like to consider myself a little bit of a traditionalist, but I really enjoyed the extra base runner.
Yeah.
That really sped up the game a lot because it used to be, it's like, okay, it's a Tuesday. Do I have time to watch a baseball game?
No.
Not really, you know, and now it's, well, you know, they're only like 2.5-3 hours long.
I can,
and I could still be to work the next day. Right. So it's not like a long process anymore.
Yeah, it's a big deal. There's no doubt. The pitch clock's been great. We love the pace. It's been nice. So it'll be interesting what comes down to college baseball, if the ABS ever gets into college baseball. But certainly the pitch clock is all in, and it was great this last year, and we're excited. And I think it'll get better and better every year.
So it is at, you know, the Division II. I remember that for a long time it wasn't at Division III. You know, I graduated from Division III. I graduated from Stevens Point.
Okay.
So a lot of that stuff kind of wasn't there, you know. And then eventually it was like, okay, we're making this league, you know, NCAA-wide. So get into it, or you're not having a team next year.
Exactly.
Right? So, with those changes, kind of what did you notice the reaction be from the administrative side, or from your side, or just in general?
Yeah, I think the hardest part was just the consistent enforcement, and just now we have to have a visual pitch clock. It used to be like, okay, the umpire's got the stopwatch.
He's got a stopwatch.
And I think that's where it's still at D3. They're doing it that way.
Yeah.
But we have a visible clock at Lowry Field. It's certainly just getting used to it. And we had a team meeting last night to get ready for our upcoming games to talk through some of these rules and make sure that we're all on the same page and our hitters got to be engaged with the pitcher with 8 seconds left on the clock. There's also now a big push for a double first base just to avoid conflicts that may be, you know, big leagues went to the bigger bases to allow more room at first and to hopefully improve stolen base or, you know, stolen base numbers, just a easier bag potentially. So we got a double first base. Now we went through those rules and just making sure.
There was a lot of controversy around
100%.
That. And I remember it was because the runner, they couldn't decide what it was. Right.
Yes.
And then I guess it's one of those things where it's like, oh, I didn't think about that until it happens.
Yep.
But remember it was where the runner, it was a pickoff move.
Yeah.
He came back in at first and stood up on the bag.
Yes.
The second bag.
And they got called out.
He got called out.
Yeah.
And he's sitting, I'm on the bag. And the umpire goes, well, it's not the actual bag.
Correct.
And everybody was like, what just happened? It was this whole process. And so are they still sticking with orange bags?
Yeah,
not
you
safe?
Have to be. So the only time that you can use the colored bag, the orange or green is what is allowed in the NCAA, is the initial play at first base.
Okay.
As soon as that plays over, you are all on the white.
The white. The white.
Yes.
That's it. Okay.
Yes. So it's really interesting. We talked through that last night with the guys as well. So
and were they like, huh?
Yeah. And we showed a video. We showed the guy getting called out that was standing on the, you know, the orange bag.
Yeah, I was somewhere and like not the SEC. I think it was like the Mountain West or something like that. Yeah, it was like Sacramento State out
crazy.
In California or whatever. But
crazy. Yeah, no, the game's evolving and we just got to stay with it. We've been same thing with technology. Like we've been really working hard to raise the funds to improve the technology, the player development pieces, and again, coming from in a program here that has basically had two head coaches from 1966 to 2022, like that's a long time.
Yeah.
And you know that they had the similar kind of styles when it came to like the player development piece was a little more old school and they weren't as ingrained in the technology because they grew up in a different era. Where now these players are growing up with all these technology pieces. And so we've had to work hard and work with our foundation office, athletic department, partner with softball, and just try to purchase some of these newer technology pieces. And it's been great. We had an alum just give us a significant donation for us to buy a pitching machine that just can do it all. You know, it's amazing. We have a hit tracks down in our cages, which basically a golf, for those that don't know, hit tracks is a golf, it's like a golf simulator, you know.
Oh,
you take BP at Miller Park or whatever, Ampan Field or Target Field, and you see all the metrics and where the ball goes,
where it goes, all that stuff. Yeah,
so all of that stuff matters, and these kids are developing with all these in all these facilities, so we need to have it, you know. They're growing up with this stuff, and for us not to have it would be an issue in recruiting and those sorts of things.
I was just about to say, you know, it helps with recruiting.
Yes.
And you go like, we have the facility.
Right.
These are nice facilities that you get to practice in, right? So it's that's the other thing is like with recruiting and all that stuff. Yeah, I mean, kids are always going to go where they feel like their talents be appreciated.
Yep.
But they also want to go somewhere that looks cool.
Exactly. No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah. Well, I have one final question for you, all right? And I meant to ask this kind of to my other guests, and I'm finally remembering to ask it. If you got to change one rule about the sport of baseball, what would it be?
Man, that is a loaded question. That is a really good question. You know, I do think they're addressing it with the pace. The games do get long, and just continuing to monitor that, the in-between innings, the pitching change. You know, and they are addressing it in the big leagues, but just not having so many pitching changes, you know, making them face three batters. So we're kind of addressing some of that stuff.
Yeah.
Hey, I would say this. For the NSIC, everyone should have a turf field.
Well, there you go. It's outside of my hand.
There
now.
We go. So, yeah. There we go. Yeah, no, that would probably be. Otherwise, the game's great. It teaches it so much. It's a game of failure, and it's such a life learning, all sports are,
it's
team.
It's a game you can play forever.
100%.
Yeah.
And but also it's a game you're going to get out a lot and you're going to make errors. And like, you have to overcome that stuff, and it teaches you life lessons. Like, you know, you're going to have something happen to one of your kids and you got to deal with that. So like, you're always going to have adversity in life. And baseball is a game of dealing with adversity, from the weather to mistakes by your teammates to errors to striking out to, you know, I saw a second baseman from Indiana have the yips on a throw to first to win a game at North Carolina.
Yeah, and he threw
it
off the ground. Yeah.
Think about what that student athlete's going through mentally right now, that he's going to overcome because he's got great teammates and coaches, and that is going to stick with him, that battle that he's going to have, and it's going to make him a better person
in the rest of his life.
100%.
Coach, so, I don't think I have anything else to ask you. I think that was a great conversation. So anything else you want to leave the listeners with?
No, thanks for supporting our athletic department, you know, with Jen and leading the crew. I'm very excited about her vision. I'm excited about President Jan's. We've got some great things happening. And, you know, when the weather's nice, come on out to Lowry this spring. Even if you're driving by or swinging into Quick Trip and you see us playing, come on over.
It's a great backdrop. It's right there.
It really is. Really is. So.
All righty, Coach. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Warrior Way podcast, brought to you by Winona State Athletics and Layden Media. Tune in next time for more exciting WSU sports talk and news.